some of you at least are in favor of more production of fossil fuel, which is ultimately destroying the very communities that your people live in.
Congress debates global warming and oil extraction. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Congressman Young makes national headlines with a comment about gray wolves.
I'd like to introduce them in your district. I'd introduce your district, you wouldn't have a homeless problem anymore. I yield back.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
And by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
In the nation's capital, lawmakers fled to airports ahead of a snowstorm today that closed most government offices. But one U.S. senator held a hearing anyway. Scores of Alaskans packed into Senator Lisa Murkowski's Energy Committee for a hearing on Arctic opportunities. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
The hearing provided an overview of Arctic issues, the prospect of new trade routes and drilling as the sea ice retreats, the need for infrastructure, the threat of erosion. Alaska witnesses advocated for more Arctic oil development on federal lands and offshore. State Representative Bob Herron, a Democrat, says Arctic Alaskans deserve a chance at economic advancement.
We're not a snow globe. We're not some. We're not little Eskimos in a museum.
Senator Al Franken, a Minnesota Democrat who used to make a living from satire, smelled irony. He asked climate change scientist Cecilia Bitz to confirm that greenhouse gas emissions are warming the planet and, to a large extent, causing the loss of sea ice. Then Franken spelled out the paradox.
That the burning of fossil fuels is creating an opportunity to find more fossil fuels to burn.
It is obviously ironic, yes.
Yeah, it's funny how ironic it is. It's hilarious.
Senator Bernie Sanders, a Vermont independent and a fierce champion of limiting carbon emissions, pursued it further.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers predicted that the highest point in the village of Nutak, Alaska, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, could be underwater by 2017. A proposed move to higher ground may cost as much as $130 million.
Moreover, Sanders noted, 86% of all Alaska Native villages are deemed at risk due to climate change. Sanders pushed the Alaskan witnesses to answer for their support of oil development.
Some of you at least are in favor of more production of fossil fuel, which is ultimately destroying the very communities that your people live in. That does not make a lot of sense to me in all respect. What am I missing?
North Slope Borough Mayor Charlotte Brower took the long view.
I believe that this is a 10,000-year-old question. We never question anything that comes to us. We live with what is come before us.
Let me just ask you this.
Brower had earlier explained how the Prudhoe Bay oil discovery had allowed the Inupiat to move out of sod houses and warm their homes with natural gas instead of whale oil. Murkowski then raised revenue sharing as a solution. If Alaska communities got a share of the proceeds of federal petroleum lease sales, Murkowski says it could help towns pay to relocate or defend against erosion. Republican State Senator Liesl McGuire, another Alaskan on the witness panel, agreed.
And just to touch back on Senator Sanders, I think what we're asking for is the opportunity to continue to adapt.
McGuire says the world will continue to burn fossil fuel while renewables develop, so that fuel might as well come from Alaska, where the revenue can improve the lives of the people most vulnerable to climate change. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
On the other side of the Capitol, Alaska Congressman Don Young attended the only other congressional hearing on this snowy day in Washington, and he created a stir with a comment about homeless people. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell was defending her budget to the House Natural Resources Committee. Young is no fan of Jewell, but he actually supported her department's 2011 decision to delist the gray wolf from the endangered species list. Instead, Young turned his ire on Congress members who asked Jewell not to delist.
The gray wolf, in fact, is a predator which is killing the clovenhoof animals. And we got 79 congressmen sending you a letter, haven't got a damn wolf in your whole district. I'd like to introduce them in your district. I'd introduce your district, you wouldn't have a homeless problem anymore. I yield back.
In a written statement afterward, Young said he was employing analogy and hyperbole to point out that wolves are a problem for communities that have them. If you misunderstood my comments, Young said in the statement his office put out, just imagine the impact a healthy wolf population would have on your own town, community, or congressional district. See, Alaska gets its new land tomorrow. The Federal Bureau of Land Management will sign paperwork turns over 70,000 acres of Southeast Alaska's Tongass National Forest. The agency's Ramona Chin says it must still be surveyed and patented, but as of Friday, the land is Sea Alaska's.
It's a milestone for the land transfer program. Sea Alaska's one of 12 regions, and this would finalize their entitlement.
Federal legislation passed late last year turned the land over to the Juneau-based Regional Native Corporation. Sea Alaska gave up the right to select other lands in Southeast under terms of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The Bureau of Land Management's Erica Reed says Sea Alaska prioritized which of the new parcels it wants first.
We are going to be able to, we think, depending on budget, survey the first two priorities this year. But assuming we maintain a stable budget, it will probably take us about 5 years to survey all 18 parcels.
The full process will take about 8 years. About 3,400 acres of old-growth forest on the Cleveland Peninsula and Prince of Wales Island's North Election Creek are at the top of the list. Sea Alaska has said logging could begin this year, but it's not a firm decision. The parcels are near other corporation land with logging infrastructure. Sea Alaska can also take over up to 76 tracts of cemetery and other historic sites, totaling no more than 490 acres. No timeline is set for that process. A State Department of Law official told concerned lawmakers that regulating marijuana shouldn't result in federal prosecution. Senator Anna McKinnon said today during a Senate Finance Committee hearing that she had heard from members of the public who thought that legislators were violating federal law if they implemented the ballot initiative legalizing marijuana. Department of Law Representative Rick Svobodny told lawmakers that isn't the case. The oath requires them to uphold federal and state constitutions, but doesn't mention specific federal laws. Although Alaska voters approved possession, personal use, and transportation of limited quantities of marijuana for adults 21 and over, it remains illegal federally. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Anchorage Museum opens a new lab aimed at getting kids excited about inventing.
It's a circuit that's really cool. Once you do it, this will spin around.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Glaciologist Aaron Pettit was on a kayaking trip in Glacier Bay in 2006 when she first wondered what kind of noise glaciers were making under the ice, the water. Her new research shows the answer to that question is a lot. and not just when they're calving, like the sound of pressurized bubbles being released from a glacier. The study shows animals like seals and whales who live and feed near glaciers have adapted to a noisy environment and will have to adjust to much quieter surroundings when global warming forces glaciers to retreat onto land. Pettit says on the kayaking trip, she remembers watching one whale interact with the glacier.
There was a humpback whale that was breaching and playing around and just making a lot of noise. And this went on for hours, and it almost seemed like that the whale was trying to talk to or interact with the glacier, because the glacier would calve and create this big noise, and then the whale would do his thing or her thing, and this went on for hours into the evening, and it really just triggered me to start thinking about, well, what do the glaciers sound like underwater, and what does that mean, that what do whales think of the glaciers?
So, Erin, what's going on there beyond the calving that, of course, is noisy? Why is the ocean so noisy near glaciers?
That really comes down to the pressurized air bubbles that get into glacier ice because of the way snow compresses down and turns into ice way up in the tops of the mountains. As the ice melts, there are little tiny explosions of air coming out of these pressurized bubbles, these pressurized air pockets in the ice that explode out into the water, creating bubbles in the water, which is the primary source of the noise.
And how loud is it? What can it be compared to?
It's hard to make comparisons, but the best that I can think of would be a background white noise hissing sound, but on top of that, there's the little bloop, 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 bubble sound. So if you had a background white noise and then, for example, a choir of children playing the triangle, and maybe not in any organized manner, so you have a whole bunch of random triangle noises going on all at the same time.
So what's the result of all this cacophony? How do you think the noise level is affecting seals and whales?
So while a glacier is retreating, you might have periods of elevated noise. But the key thing for me is that when the glacier finally retreats up completely out of the fjord and on the land, then the whole fjord sound will actually go down and become a very quiet, more normal ocean-like environment. So if for hundreds of years a particular fjord has had, or thousands of years, a particular fjord has had a tidewater glacier with lots of noisy bubbles, and the local ecosystem, the whales and the seals and everybody has adapted to this really noisy environment, and then eventually the glacier completely retreats up out of the water, suddenly that whole environment will undergo a pretty dramatic change in the ambient sound that they've adapted to. And they will once again have to readapt to this completely new environment. Maybe the seals will go find another fjord to use that still has a glacier, or you'll see changing behavior in the animals to readapt to the now quiet fjord. So I just see that this could really suggest a lot more subtle interactions between the changes in the glaciers and the changes in the ecosystem, the behavior of the marine mammals and such than we've really thought about before.
Erin Pettit is a glaciologist with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Rapid population growth in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough has brought some problems with it. One of them is a shortage of low-income housing. In this first in a series, KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports on how cooperation among church groups and nonprofits is helping provide housing for Valley families in need.
It's grand opening day at Knick House in Wasilla.
Amen. 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 Watch out,
A snip of the scissors and the red ribbon across the door sill falls away. Red and white balloons festoon the doorways of the new men's bunkhouse, filled on a recent afternoon with visitors, food, and music. Knick House director Andrea Moore offers some welcoming comments above the hubbub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Thank you guys for coming out. This is super special for us. I'm going to try not to get emotional. A lot of hard work, a lot of people behind the scenes that have been helping bring us all together, and just having the support of all of you here is just amazing.
Knick House is really two buildings, a four-bedroom house for women and a separate men's bunkhouse with 15 beds. The church-run facility is located on a winding street far from Wasilla's main drag, and it provides transitional housing for people in need of a place to call home. Carrie Gaston is executive director of Blood and Fire Ministry, which operates Knick House. Showing off the women's house, Gaston says it's built pretty much on donations. Knick House's Facebook page asks for help in every possible way. Beds, blankets, building supplies, crowdfunding.
Every single need that we've had, we basically speak it out and it comes out. And it comes, somebody comes up. And this is our community that's doing this.
Gaston says the idea behind Knick House is to help people get back on their feet and into stable housing. Clients can stay up to 18 months, but are expected to pay something toward costs.
And then it'll be a sliding scale. We'll never charge you more than $400 a month. It just depends on how much they're making so that we can make sure that they can keep a savings and be able to eventually be able to get out on their own.
Blood and Fire started with a food pantry, but has expanded into housing for people in crisis thanks to its share of a federal homeless assistance program grant, which is split up among 8 organizations that serve the Mat-Su borough. Collaboration among the community groups is the key to winning the fight against homelessness, according to Dave Rose, who directs Mat-Su Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. For instance, one HAP grant helps serve close to 3,000 households through the various social agencies and church groups. Blood and Fire is doing its bit to help by providing the new transitional housing. Gaston says placements are filling up fast.
Men getting ready to come in here are actually homeless living out of their vehicles right now. And right now, I think the women's house is almost full, and the men's house is probably about half, almost two-thirds full.
A recent needs assessment done by the Mat-Su borough indicates that more than half of Mat-Su homelessness is driven by unemployment or underemployment. Gaston says a year or so of stable housing gives people a hand up and a second chance. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Anchorage police have released the name of the pedestrian struck and killed Wednesday by an SUV. Police say 51-year-old Russell Place was hit just after 1:30 p.m. at Benson Boulevard and New Seward Highway. Police say the 49-year-old woman driving the SUV was northbound on the highway. Place was walking in the road when he was struck. Medics declared him dead at the scene. No citations had been issued as of this afternoon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your friends, family, and neighbors at Raven Alaska, connecting over 100 communities across the state. Find out more at flyraven.com. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
What do buckets, disco balls, circuits, and marbles have in common? They're all part of the Anchorage Museum's attempt to spark innovation in their new interactive exhibit. KSKA's Ann Hillman has more.
4-year-old Annabelle Landsman wanders into the Anchorage Museum's new Spark Lab ahead of the other kids and sees balls and pipes hanging from metal rods. Buckets and a bingo ball cage stick out from the base. It's like a tree of stuff. A volunteer hands her a drumstick, and Annabelle tentatively taps the different objects.
Why'd you hit the bucket?
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. Very nice. Oh. Should we put
So, are you allowed to hit things at home?
No.
So how did it feel to be allowed to hit things here?
Good.
She giggles and wanders to the next station, creating a mini hydroponic garden with nylon, pebbles, and cotton. Soon, a group of fourth graders joins her, and the room erupts in noise.
I'll hold it right now.
So why encourage such chaos? Arthur Malella is the director of the Lemelson Center at the Smithsonian, which created the Spark Lab.
This is not just banging things that's going on here. This is all done with a purpose, because some of the same energies that are happening here, but it's just essentially this curiosity, a disciplined curiosity, begins here, carries on through the rest of your life.
Malella says that curiosity and creativity lead to innovation and invention. That's why his center worked with educators to create the Spark Lab. They're helping museums around the United States set up their own localized versions. The Anchorage version, the sixth in the country, will soon include activities focused on the innovation required to live in the Arctic. The students quickly disperse to the different activities in the room. Some design shoes, others use blocks, ramps, and mini xylophones to create an obstacle course for a marble. Fourth grader Sandia Whalen is part of a group that's trying to get a marble to go down a path, turn a corner, and return to its start.
But I don't think sometimes it'll work because there are things that are down at first but then go up and the marble can't move up without being pushed.
Because it's not going fast enough.
If it goes fast enough, then that might do it, but we have to make it go fast enough.
Sandia is doing exactly what the exhibit designers intended. She's problem-solving and innovating. Further down the table, her classmate, Matthew Hudson, snaps together plastic pieces with wire embedded in them and connects them to batteries and propellers.
It's a circuit that's really cool. Once you do it, this will spin around and go into the air, and it's really cool.
He says now that he knows the basics, he's ready to design his own.
My own circuit, it would be like a train. It would be like tracks. It would move the train and bring me ice cream whenever I wanted ice cream.
The Spark Lab will be around for at least 2 years, but the space will permanently be dedicated to creativity and invention. The exhibit is aimed mostly at children aged 6 to 12, though it includes a toddler area too. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Sports like basketball are well supported at schools around Southeast Alaska. But in Skagway, the superintendent and school board have made a deliberate effort to expand activities beyond athletics. In the past 2 years, the 90-student school has increased the number of academic extracurriculars offered. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
If there's one team Skagway School is known for, it's robotics. Sophomore Denver Evans is in the cafeteria on a recent afternoon. She says being on the robotics team for 3 years in middle school helped her in an unexpected way.
I was an extremely shy kid, and having to talk in front of all the people to give our presentation, we had to give our presentation to a room of anywhere between 200 and 300 people, and standing up on stage is petrifying. But now I have no problem speaking in front of people, and my little sister is the exact same way.
I really think it's like opening me up to like so I can be more out there, because I used to be like really like not wanting to like talk to anybody and stuff like that.
That's Denver's little sister, Peyton Rodig, who is in sixth grade. This is her second year on the hugely successful robotics team.
Our team's gotten a reputation in Juneau. We are the ones that the other teams go out to outdo.
Greg Clem is the assistant coach. He says the Skagway team has won the regional competition in Juneau several times and then gone on to place well at national and international competitions. They placed second at the statewide robotics competition in Anchorage this year, and they'll be traveling to the national competition in California soon. The success of robotics has set a good precedent for the school to try out other academic extracurriculars. The school registered in the Scripps Trip's Spelling Bee this year. Last year, the high school started a poetry competition. And also this year, students who enjoy math can compete in a program called Math Counts. Skagway School Board President John Hischer says the board has made it a priority to encourage academic competitions. He says they help reinforce what students learn in class.
When you think about your school experience, what are the things you remember most? It's not usually things that you learn from a textbook. It's when you go out and apply it in the real world or apply it in a competition.
I decided to compete because I love spelling, and it's just like whenever I'm in my spelling class, I always look forward to spelling, and it's just, I really liked it, and I ended up getting first place, and it was really cool.
Tatum Sager is a fifth grader. She won the spelling bee this year, but she and the second place winner aren't able to travel to the state competition. So Kalia Fielding, the third place winner, will go to Anchorage instead. Another person traveling to a state competition soon is high school junior Al Weber.
As the bottles and bones accumulated behind him, the words proceeded steadily from the front of his face as he advanced into the silence and made it verbal.
That's a clip of Al rehearsing Life Cycle of Common Man by Howard Nemirov. She'll recite it at the Poetry Out Loud competition in Anchorage in March.
It actually made sense to me, like it sounded like a story in my head, so I went with it because that's what poems should be. They should be stories.
Kent Fielding is the teacher who organized the Poetry Out Loud program at Skagway School. He'll also be the coach for DDF, Drama, Debate, and Forensics. That's an extracurricular that Skagway School is bringing back next year after a few years without it. With so many activities and only about 90 students, School Board President John Hischer says there is one concern.
Where I see the big danger is the kids spreading themselves too thin with so many things.
That could be a problem as the school adds DDF to its list of options. So Superintendent Josh Coffrin says they're considering this.
Potentially putting DDF as a class, as an elective class inside the school day. That way they can devote that time and energy that it takes to be really good at DDF while still being able to support their teammates on, say, a volleyball team or a wrestling team or cross country.
Back in the cafeteria, sixth grader Peyton says she's found that two of her favorite activities, basketball and robotics, have something in common.
You're getting exercise in basketball, but you're exercising your brain in robotics.
Reporting in Skagway, I'm Emily Files.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer in the Mat-Su Borough, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, and Emily Files in Skagway. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at ArcticWireRope.com.
And by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.